The idea is you get out of North Ministry, you start your journey, you become a journeyman.
That's the idea.
Okay, let's stay high level, okay? You're getting into too much detail.
Okay.
What changed? Why are you back?
He just kept begging me to come back and like, dude, all right.
Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. We're still here in Boston. We're back kind of wrapping up.
Recapping this incredible couple days. Oh my gosh. Yes, sorry.
No, that's all. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, it's our last day. So, or our last episode here.
Last episode here.
We'll probably be back, right? Because you still got 8 months here.
I think we
got
to be back in April or do some other filming here. Well, let's hear some feedback. Like, we're going to read the comments and just see the feedback on what people thought, but I think this has been an awesome time.
And we'll let the cold weather pass before you bring me back up here.
Might be a good idea. It's about to be real cold all the way through till May.
So I think this should be a episode all on Richard.
Not on
my
Boston.
Flight leaves in like 10 minutes though. So
like I am always saying travel.
Even in our last episode, you even had like a full-on pause.
And then,
no, this is not beautiful.
And then
go travel.
What happens? I travel here, and then I see the most beautiful thing ever. And he's like, "You need to travel." Like, no,
I'll stick with that. I will say, when you go to the Vatican, or you go see Michelangelo, or you go see the things, your mind will blow. But that was kind of a rude thing for me. Because it was an incredible space.
Yeah.
No,
it was incredible.
Free speech absolutist. You could say it.
I mean, so like you enjoyed it as much as I hoped you would, right?
Yes. You have more probably. Yeah.
I mean, you were here a day earlier than us and you were walking around, you and Ashley, and just right.
Yeah. We went to the place we stayed was near you, and I don't know like what we were getting into, but we had several hours before you guys showed up. So then we decided to go out and just explore the city and stumble into Beacon Hill, which is like the perfect place to stumble into.
Yes,
apparently.
It is.
It's just, it's like when you, well, if you guys watch the other episodes, when we're up in Salem, it's like, we're always like wandering off, but it's easy to do that because everywhere you look, it's like, well, look at that little motif or look at that bed molding. Like everything is just like, you get distracted. So that is very different. Like, very different than where I come from.
Can I say I have homework for you?
Yes.
You're here for another like half day. So whenever we leave, it's going to get darkish soon. So maybe not. But if y'all have a chance, go up to Cambridge, go to Brattle Street, go look at Harvard's campus, go walk up and down Brattle Street, and you'll be like, just mind blown.
Yeah.
And some of the cool houses there too, because that's more Victorian era. That's like more, anyway, there's just so much history. One of the most interesting things, I may have said this on podcast before, but whenever I'm here, everyone's like, yeah, that's not a very historic home. I'm like, well, when was it built? Well, it was the 1830s, 40s. I'm like, that's still awesome.
I remember that. They did the same thing.
And so, I'm very partial to a lot of the Victorian things. I like a lot of what they do then. And so, anyway, it's just so cool. There's so much history here. But
so,
Battle Street's...
One thing that reminded me of this when we were walking around Salem is I saw a little bracket going out off a porch extension, and I was like, that's what I'm going to do at my daughter's house, right?
Is that where you stop the traffic to pull in?
Yeah, we were driving on a road, like just normal road, and literally...
I break for brackets.
You pulled over to the left hand into the oncoming traffic and just parked...
You cut off someone's grandma. She was like,
"Yeah, she was." But it was to
it
be
was
fair.
Worth
there
it.
Was no oncoming traffic at the time. But it was very. There we were in the other lane. It
well,
was,
what's what? Well, I guess the reason I did that, and I have a good reason. is that I own all those historic molding catalogs. One of the most intriguing parts of the 1890s, 1880s catalogs is the bracket, and they'll have pages, 20 pages of brackets. Our housing stock in Texas doesn't really have that 1860 to 1890 really well done Victorian like we saw in Salem. And so when I see those brackets, we don't see them. I'm always like, oh my gosh, there they are. That's what I've been you know, drooling over for the last 30 years. So that's why I stopped, because it was really an incredible bracket. But I get where I was going with all that is that it reminded me, it's like, this is why I travel, because my kids, my daughter's house in Nashville, the anti-flipper, we're trying to do something on a 1940s kind of colonial revival builder house, do things that will elevate it and will make it a little bit better. And so they don't have a big budget. And so they're looking for inspiration, and we all need inspiration. And so where do you find that? Pinterest, Instagram, or travel? And so anyway, just driving around, seeing all that stuff and going and being reminded about enthesis and being reminded. And when you see a column really well done, or you see a pier and you go, oh, there's a good one. Square columns in Texas are all over the place right now. And I think it's because they don't know how to do a round column right. And so a square column, you don't join somewhere?
I guess.
Square column. What's up, little boy?
Would a square column be called a pier?
Not a notch.
Uh-huh. And so, but a pier doesn't have enthesis. And so I think that they look at square columns, you know, it's an easy way for me to build on site or build a cheap column. And like in that King's Chapel today, those columns were gorgeous. And did you know that that was one piece?
I don't believe it's still. I didn't get to see the top of it.
One piece.
I don't think that's possible. I don't think it's legal.
Actually, they had to glue on the volutes, so it doesn't.
Yeah, it's true.
They did have to glue on the volutes.
Good point.
To be fair, what I said was the whole thing was carved out of the tree. It was not the whole thing carved out of the tree. See? They had to glue on the very edge of the capitals. I was wrong. I'll take that one.
Good point.
I'll wear that one.
Thank you. I was waiting for that.
But wow, what a freaking cool deal.
But those columns were beautiful, right? The proportions were great. They're just, so pretty.
I will say one thing that we were talking about that. We've talked about you and Vossel trying to, and your team, not just you and Vossel, creating a Corinthian capital. That was a Corinthian capital. I will give you guys credit where credit is due. They did not go into the level of detail and ornate carving that you guys did on y'all's. But even still, it checked all the boxes of a Corinthian.
Yeah.
It was very impressive.
I mean, the other thing that I think stands out to me is we were walking around Salem and up Federal Street. I was reminded how transitionary these different styles are, and that you could have this really good Federal column, kind of light and dainty. And then you have a 1790s house, and it's in between Georgian and Federal. And I was quizzing you guys, and we're like, what style is that? What period is that? It's hard to tell sometimes, and it's hard to kind of put all these things together. And I'm reminded, looking at architectural styles, I've been doing it for so long, I now kind of can get it right 90% of the time.
What is right?
How many times do you think you get it right?
Not often. I would say like...
No, I mean, I'm picking on you, but 20, 30, 40% of the time?
I think more than that. I think 70% of the time, but...
I don't know about 70.
Now I'm getting picked on.
60%.
I'd say 50 for me.
Okay, so, I mean, it's just, you know, how do you learn? You have to see it. You got to fill up your brain with different pictures of it and go, oh, okay, I see what's happening.
I mean,
there.
Here's the other side of it,
learning
too.
To recognize it. It takes a long time.
I'm in the stage of, like, you're so mad about all the stuff I'm learning in North Bennett Street School because, Ryan and I were both talking about it when he was with us, is just we are taught this is what this is. And then you go, all right, that's what that is. He and I were talking while we're walking up and down the streets. We're like, do you still have your packet? Yeah, I still have my packet. We got a packet at the very beginning that was like, all right, this is this style. And it's just one house that is that style. And then Steve would go through and go, look at this, look at this, look at this. These are all details that are leading me to say that it is of this style.
Right.
And so then we did multiple tours, like walking tours of streets, where that was the trend, where we would go, what style is this? What is it? You're right. It's the experience thing. But I'm also in a school setting where I'm trying to just be like, what's the right answer?
And I remember I said it in my book. I remember specifically with Robert Adam standing in front of a house and going, how old is it? And us all going, you know, there's siding on it. So
if you squint more.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And there's a door. And I had no clue how to put all those pieces together. And now, you know, how long, right? Does it take? I mean, I would say for me to get good at it, you're probably going to last 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, a long freaking time until I could say that's that.
And you'd say you're like 90% of the time or more that you get it like right.
Well, if getting it right is within 5 years when it was built, yeah.
No, I'm saying like style wise, like this is a Italianate or this is a.
I mean, most times, I think I do.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's room for error in every one of these things because it's like, you know, you can always find the one example of, no, you didn't know that one, but.
Right.
Yeah, but it's.
Well, I mean, it's just like when we were looking at that church today and I said it's kind of Baroque.
Yeah.
How do I know that? Well, I just finished studying Baroque architecture for this talk I was giving. And I had to look up, like, when is the Baroque period? What is that? And the French Baroque is different from the English Baroque. And Christopher Wren would be a Baroque architect. And so, you know, that 1720s, 1740s would be late for Baroque. But because America was late, there was details in there that made me say that. And so, anyway, you just learn. I'm still learning more. Like, I don't really understand all the English styles. I can't go to England and go, that's that, that's that. I can't do it. Why? Well, you have to digest so much of it and understand when those things were built. It's just
I remember harder. When we were first doing the podcast with you, we were like, all right, so what is this style? What is to explain this one? And I'm like, what's the Nordic style? What does that one fall into? And you're like, I don't know anything outside of America. And I just remember being like, looking at Richard, like, this is crazy. He just said he doesn't know an architecture style. But it's like, no, you're an American architecture specialist. Also, like the house dating thing, just talking about what Robert Adam was doing with you guys, where he would, you know, bring you up to a house. How old is it? It is funny. Everyone's different skill trait because we would never do that with Michael, where Michael would go, you know, we could look at the inside. He's, as you saw at the King's Chapel, he's talking about like the granite and where this has come from. And he's looking at like almost how it was made, not when it was made, and like the history. So it's fun just seeing how everyone's different little biases bring them into different sects of whatever cool part of architecture exists, you know?
You have people who just have like a general personal interest, like Michael, who's taking us on those tours. Like he wants to build like a timber frame thing. And you're not a big fan of timber frame.
Yeah.
So obviously he's going to be
right
more knowledgeable in that
because
he's
sure.
interested in it.
Here's an education question. What do you think about, like, do you, if you could have gone back and gone to North Bennett Street or school like that, would you have?
If it wasn't for the parking, yeah. I would have. No, I think I would have. I actually would even go now if I didn't have a family and like a, you know, a wife and kids. I think it would be cool to even do it now. Yeah, I think having like a formal education in this would have really benefited me, and probably I probably would have been years ahead of where I am now.
So there is the possibility of us having a class or two or trying something in Texas, North Bennett Street South. What would inspire you to go to that? And I'm thinking it doesn't have to be a year-long course or two-year course.
Yeah.
It's more
week-long course, like two-week course?
Yeah, maybe 2-3-week courses or something. I don't know. We don't know.
And or like we're once still, a week or,
yeah,
you know, I don't know.
Going in and gaining and learning something like that. Is that like, holy, that's unbelievable? Or is that like, yeah, maybe?
I think it would be unbelievable. Yeah, I think to bring that down there. I would personally be interested in it. I'm thinking of the people down there. Would they? I mean, there's people down there who love this stuff.
Like Texas is a masonry market.
That's how I was going to
say. So if you had a masonry course down there where you're actually teaching lime plaster, lime mortars, stonework, brickwork, you know, and just kind of giving this well-rounded thing of how you do stuff, I think that would do well.
I'm telling you, everyone up here is like, I really want to learn more about masonry. I really want to learn more about race. Because you go to Paris, you go to England, they've got all this great stonework and they know all about their stones. We lost that because we were so quick to build. Everything's built out of wood. Nothing's built to last in a lot of ways, you know, like, of course, everything's trying to build to last, but like there, we're talking about a 1,000-year-old structure. Here, we're talking about 300-year-old structure. And we're like, that's pretty good, you know? No one came along and tore it down.
You make us sound so dumb.
That's well, I, in a way, like, no, we kind of are.
The comparison,
you know,
is crazy.
You compare the two, and it's like our initial, like, coolest buildings are not even close. But it, also, you factor in the other stuff, too, like how long was Paris established before it decided to start making a Notre Dame, you know? How long did that exist before the permanent structure came into play?
I'm just curious whether that would be something that would be, because we're exploring this idea and, you know, what would it look like and who would come, right? And who would show up? Education is just a huge, huge piece of it that doesn't happen in our trades today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, kind of seeing this world up in Boston, you know, we started this podcast, this idea, Death of Craftsmanship. You know, we're going to learn to build better. Travel to me seems to be a integral component of building better, I think, right? I mean,
yes.
And I don't know how to train that or teach that, but it's like just seeing you get excited about this stuff and seeing you go, I think this is the nicest place I've ever been, is so exciting for me, even though I didn't say that.
No, you really kind of poo-pooed it.
It's so exciting.
Like, no, you can't have this.
It's so exciting for me because it's just like, yeah, this is what I'm talking about. And when you see it done well, you're like, oh my gosh, this is gorgeous. But no one, I'm going to be careful how I say this, I don't think there's a good classical building like that church in Texas, right, that I can think of that I'm like, well, there's an example of it. Well, no, there's not. And so how do people know what's beautiful until they travel and see something, then go, oh, that's what they're trying to do.
Yes, I would 100% agree. Because before meeting you guys, we would take like a family trip every year to like Destin or California because the kids wanted to go to the beach, you know. But now me and Ashley are taking these trips. Like, I had no interest in coming to the New England or the Northeast because everyone has said, oh, the traffic sucks and like it's awful and it's cold. And well, that's kind of true. but as far as like the architecture and the reason I would travel to come up here for that is like, like you could see it clearly. Like there's nothing like this in Destin or San Diego where we would go. Yeah. I think you have to come up here or go wherever you're interested in, because I could see your videos and they're great, or I could see your pictures, but it's just like being in there and like standing in there with the columns.
It's amazing.
You realize where I would make a statement like that. Like,
yeah,
I've never seen anything like this. And I can't think of a place in Texas.
I can't either.
It's like also fun taking, like, I took your photo. It'll probably be out on one of your content pieces.
Yeah.
But next to the pilaster in the King's Chapel. And the thing is, as tall, if not taller than you, and it's just like a small piece of the neck of this Corinthian pilaster. Like, what in the world? Like, that is crazy. Anyway, so even some of that stuff, you can't really get a gauge for that on camera. You even said that. You were like, take a picture of me because this won't translate to camera. Like, this scale is going to be off. Anyway, I think there's something funny, too. You're saying that like you just don't have this in Texas. Like you don't know what you're missing out on until you see it. And it's so funny that I've been talking for a year and a half with all the people who live here. And I'm like, you guys just don't get the traffic here. You don't understand how bad it is here. And they're like, yeah, we don't. We think it's fine. This is no big deal. You know, an hour commute every day is no big deal. And then
I remember Robert, his commute was an hour to an hour and a half every day.
Yeah.
I was just like, what? And my commute 6 minutes.
yeah. But I'm kind of joking about the commute thing. But they don't realize that they are surrounded by it all the time, because I bet if they do travel to those places, it's not about the architecture that they're going to, you know, Destin, or they're going to California or Texas or wherever. It's for other things. But, you know, it is just interesting.
Okay, so now that you've gone to Boston, what's next?
Oh, my gosh. Where are we going?
I mean, really, what do you recommend? I mean, you said Michelangelo's house?
Paris.
well, that's in Italy. I mean, if you go to Rome and go see the Vatican, you know, it's.
I don't know if I like, want to do that to it's my
spectacular.
Senses,
if you like wood, though, don't go to Italy. Go to France.
Well, but staying in America, I mean, look. You go anywhere in England, anywhere in France, anywhere in Italy, you've got
okay,
great stuff, right?
A lot of places in Germany. Yeah. Hey, what happened?
Yeah, a lot of places.
See, it's easy to do.
I did it when we were talking.
What happened to Richard? Where did he go? For people who are listening, the chairs are going up and down. I mean,
it's
both Jackson. Richard have hit the thing and they've dropped like a foot.
If you bring your feet underneath the mass of your body in these chairs for whatever reason, your calf hits the thing and you fall.
I would say that I would probably go to Colonial Williamsburg. One, because you can take your kids there and they'll have fun running around. You can put them in, you know, there's people in period dress and there's things like that that are fun.
Is that George Washington's place?
No, that's Mount Vernon.
Where you have access to.
I couldn't remember which one I had access to. I was in the chapel today and I was like, I got to text Brady because I got to see if she'll let us in.
So Virginia is where Mount Vernon is. It's where Monticello is. And it's where Colonial Williamsburg is. And you go to Washington, D.C., go to the mall. I mean, you could spend 2 weeks there.
But Washington, D.C., the mall is like a mishmash of so many things.
Well, but you got the Lincoln Memorial at the end. You got Jefferson just off to the left. You got the Washington Monument. You got the White House. I mean, there's on the mall, there's some great stuff there.
But there's also like a bunch of science buildings. Like
The Smithsonian. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
There's a lot of stuff there.
There's a lot of stuff there.
Kind of distracted by.
So, but just architecture trip like this, I would go to Colonial Williamsburg. Mm-hmm. You can take the kids. There's tons of stuff. There's Busch Gardens next door. So if they get sick of it all, you go ride a roller coaster. Then they come back. And so
nice.
You can go to UVA. Their campus is crazy.
I regret not going there because when I was at Monticello, the lady was like, if you look over there, there's UVA. But
so you've been to Monticello?
Yes.
Yeah, they went, remember?
I went last year.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I went to Winter Tour.
Did you go to
Monticello? We didn't go.
Oh, I remember you went to Winter Tour.
Colonial Williamsburg was a thought, but we were like, we need to make time to get to Winter Tour.
No, I mean, those are two good ones.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure.
And Annapolis, and I was like right around the corner from the Hammond Harwood house, didn't know it and missed it.
Shoot.
And then came back, did a podcast with y'all, and I said, I went to Annapolis, and you said, you know, Thomas Jefferson said the greatest doorway in America is there. And I was like around the corner from it and didn't see it.
Yeah, 100 yards from it.
That is the craziest thing too, because you go to these places and you don't know what's good until some local tells you, oh yeah, there's this thing, or someone who's been there before, I wish there was a better catalog of like these are really good places to be.
I've thought that there should be an app for builders for travel.
What if you made it?
What? That's
perfect. And just say, here's what you need to look at. Here's what's going on. Oh, and go upstairs at King's Chapel and look down at the railing by the column. You'll see the whale's tail at the top. But look how they scribed that thing, right? All things that we would care about.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that would be a good idea.
Why don't you make one?
Yeah.
It'd be a great app.
With all my free time.
You love that one.
I don't think people would really use it. That's why. That's probably, me being negative. But I'm sitting there going, I mean, I think it'd be cool. But
even if it wasn't that detailed, even if it was just go check out King's Chapel. Go, like, it's just a list at that point, right?
Really
a curated list.
The describing and the...
Yeah. Well, like you're talking about,
but I'm thinking about details that they would like and they would appreciate.
Well, I think if they're interested in it, they'll like. I think what he's saying is like you just send them there and they're going to find it.
Yeah,
but like if they went to King's Chapel, they wouldn't have known that those were trees.
You're right.
If I hadn't told them,
you're right.
I'm glad you knew that.
Yeah, glad you knew that one. The key piece of information.
Well, you know, that's my gift is
Jack
Sobin
taught you
share
that, right?
Information like that.
But I mean, I think that's a really, because I've been here for so long. And like, for example, I went to Nantucket for a wedding at like the very beginning of this, when my friends got married there. And I was like, told my classmates after I got back, I was like, oh, yeah, I was in Nantucket this weekend. They're like, did you go check out this chapel? And I'm like, no, I didn't know about it. You know, I'm just like, I didn't even think to ask you guys before I left.
See, I think it could be, you could open it up more broadly and just say architecture for, you know, builders, architects, designers, maybe you're saying something like that. So it's not just builders.
You know, it'd be cool if you had like where you click like Boston and then you click like millwork or stone or like interiors or something. I don't know.
Like, I bet with AI you could.
I was gonna you could probably vibe code an app pretty quick.
Put it together pretty quick.
You know about that? Y'all know about vibe coding?
I've heard about it. Yeah.
What's vibe coding?
You go into Claude or ChatGPT and you go, make me an app that does this, and then you give it like the information that you want it to have, but then it'll do all the coding back end. And then you'll be like, okay, so I like how it does this, but I need you to change this. And they, you just kind of vibe, you give it the vibe and then it codes it. So it's like called vibe coding. And if it, like, if you don't believe me right now, go to Claude and say, make me an artifact that does this.
What's Claude?
It's a ChatGPT alternative. It's the best one, I think.
C-L-A-U-D-E. Oh, Cloud. Like the person?
Cloud.
Do you watch Fireship?
I don't know what that is.
Okay. But he talks about all those apps.
Really?
Yeah. It's a whole nother
rabbit
trail.
It's crazy. They do a great, like, I'm working on, like, developing this software right now, and I'm just playing around with it in my free time, and I just go into Claude anytime I've got a programming question, and it, like, shows up, like, all right, here's this whole thing that you can do, and, like, gives me, like, the actual CSS feed, like, the language, the programming language, and, like, types out the whole thing, and it's like, then it has like comments in it that are like, this is for this part. This is does this. This part does this. So then I'm like, okay, I want that, but I don't want it to do that. So then I go to my code and I like make it however. It's crazy.
What are you developing?
It's just, I'll tell you about it.
Okay.
I don't want to get into a rabbit trail. But
dude, you cannot drop a bomb like that and then just go, I'll tell you later. You can't sit there and go, oh, yeah, I'm developing this.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it's going to come out. So I just want to. Yeah, I got to figure it out first. I'll announce it when it announces.
Does it have to do with millwork and stuff?
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Okay. Fair enough.
Anyway, I've been working on cure for cancer. But
I don't
want to talk about it.
It's an app for identifying.
Like, we're really close. And it's an app for really.
So I've taken a lot of Bruce Hoadley's works, and I'm trying to figure out, because I feel dumb whenever I'm looking at a piece of wood, and I'm like, I have no idea what this is. So I'm trying to figure out a way to take a picture of a piece of wood and go, what's the graining on this? What type of wood is this? Boom.
That's cool.
Done. So I'm hoping for.
Yeah. Well, my cure for cancer.
My cure for cancer is just to help me feel less dumb when I'm like sitting there and everyone's like, oh, yeah, nice piece of pine.
You know, they used to have books, and I've got a couple of them. They're called.
I've got
physical books.
I'm basically off the books.
There are books that actually open up, and there's a piece of wood there, and it'll say, this is birch. This is this. This is this. This is its scientific name. This is, and you're look, and I always look at those now, and I'm like, that's not birch. That doesn't even look like birch. So the wood grain has changed over time. So these things are 100 years old. They got old growth wood, and the grain's much tighter, and it might even have different color.
So Bruce Hoadley is the resource that I've been using for a lot. He's got two books: Understanding Wood and Identifying Wood. Understanding Wood's greatest book of all time. Starts out, first thing you must understand is all wood comes from trees. That's the opening line of the book.
Not these days, actually.
It's very funny. Yeah, you're right. But Bruce Hoadley was just like this genius when it came to identifying wood. Like, he saw, I think I've talked about it before.
We read Understanding Wood when, we read Understanding Wood, not Identifying Wood.
He solved a murder based off of a baseball bat that was used in a crime. He figured out what region the bat was developed in because of the wood graining on it. Dendrochronology found, he did something crazy like that.
I didn't know that
but
story.
He's like a beast when it comes to the understanding and identifying wood, he's got like all the cellular structure of all the wood too. So you look at the end grain of the wood and you can see like red oak has those little spongy pattern. And so it's like a spongy layer and then a thick layer and then a spongy layer. And so just different things like that where I don't know enough of what I'm talking about. So I'm trying to figure it out. And that's what the app is for. So.
You know, we got kind of messed up on a piece of wood over at that house that Tom and I think went over there to take the wood off. Did you hear what happened? No. The really nice, super fancy house where that trim had the wood bugs.
Oh, yes.
Boring beetles.
Uh huh. So they had all this dust at the bottom of the things, and they were
active.
It was active.
And the housekeeper was cleaning it, and like, I thought I just cleaned that.
active. I mean, there was a little pile like an inch, half an inch high of dust.
Did y'all use borate or borax or anything?
We took it off. We took it out, and we're making new ones. So I looked at it. It had a wash and a finish on it, and I said, you know, this is oak, and the finishing guy, we ran the knives, made the thing, delivered to the guy, and he goes, I can't make this match because we had the original piece of wood and we had the, we were like, why? He goes, because that's not oak. And we're like, what? He goes, that's ash. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so because the color of it, I never looked at the back side of it.
I thought it was oak.
Well, it looks like oak.
So you didn't plane the back side of it so you could see fresh wood.
Didn't look, see the color difference. And so we had to rerun it, all the wood. And that would have been a good one to have somebody along the way, my team or somebody go, wait a minute, you know this is not oak. The original piece of wood. And we had the, we were like, why? He goes, because that's not oak. And we're like, what? He goes, that's ash. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so because the color of it, I never looked at the back side of it.
I thought it was oak.
Well, it looks like oak.
So you didn't plane the back side of it so you could see fresh wood.
Didn't look, see the color difference. And so we had to rerun it, all the wood. And that would have been a good one to have somebody along the way, my team or somebody go, wait a minute, you know this is not oak.
And get Jackson's app.
You know? Well, we play all these games all the time. Like whenever we're sitting around doing nothing, we'll go to the scrap bin and we'll go, all right, what's this one? And everyone kind of like scratches it, smells it, looks at the graining pattern, all this stuff. We're like, I don't know. And everyone's trying to guess. And
do you have a favorite wood?
I don't know. I'm doing like a deep dive on wood in a Bible study right now. I'm trying to look at all the woods of the Bible. Cedar of Lebanon was apparently like the coolest wood in town. It's like a soft wood, but it was really good for carving.
What's gopher wood?
I don't know. When you go for it, look it up.
You go get it.
No, gopher wood is what they told Noah to build the ark from.
Yeah.
I don't know what gopher wood is.
I'm not there yet, yeah. But there's a guy who's got a whole webpage devoted to like all the different woods, what they're used for today, where they come from, like, and all the woods like coming from, it's like acacia is really popular, cedar of Lebanon is another really popular, but they're all from like the Middle Eastern region, of course, because that's where the Bible is. But it's interesting. So I've been very interested in trying to be able to identify wood. I don't know if I have a favorite. I just ordered blank. I've worked like so much with pine and Spanish cedar. Spanish cedar, we did a bunch, all the windows that we did this summer were Spanish cedar.
You're doing white pine though. Eastern white pine.
Yeah.
Which is a completely different wood than the white pine that we have.
Seriously.
Yeah, it's a Western white pine. We don't get Eastern white pine.
Is it softer?
Well, Western yellow pine, Western white pine, like a ponderosa pine or a sugar pine, they do not last very well in the exterior in Texas. And so they rot out. They're terrible wood.
Just because they've got so many extractives inside of them?
I think they grow in an arid climate and there's too much moisture in Texas. And so especially old growth Eastern white pine, it has a real clear, even grain structure, whereas Western white pine is more grainy. And there's the difference between the early growth and the summer growth is more distinct. Whereas white pine, sometimes you look at it and it's all white. There's not really even much grain pattern from the stuff I've seen. But I think identifying woods is hard until you've worked wood, until you've cut into it, until you've planed it, until you've looked at it in the edge, looked at it in the face, looked at it.
Smelled it,
that's and touched it, one. and you walk away from the shop and you go, yeah, I know that oak smell, and I don't think you can figure it out
with an app.
Yeah. I don't.
You just crushed your vibe coding.
It's taking no time. I'm just.
I look at that Eastern white pine. Remember, we looked at that post in Salem. And I go, what is that wood? I don't recognize that because we don't really do any that have any Eastern white pine. So I'm not used to seeing it. Like, what am I looking
that's
at?
That's all we use. That's like our go to.
I went back to Fort Worth, I kept going, I need to get that white pine that we were had at North Bend Street. The other thing is
when you built those doors.
That was yellow pine though.
Thank you for bringing that up.
He brought it up at lunch. So
you were looking for that pine.
For the pine. And because they at North Bennett Street, they use a little shaper called a Williams and Hussey, a little 6-inch wide thing.
Yes,
customized.
We've used one.
They would make all their stuff.
Still use it.
Going down to Texas, the wood's too hard. I tried to get the Williams and Hussey
working.
Yes, the longleaf yellow pine is almost as strong as oak, and so doing it, I think we blew a knife. I'm pretty sure we did.
No way.
Or did that, or it just started going in and went.
Slowed it
yeah
to a stop.
That's
and so
crazy.
We couldn't use the Williams & Husky because we didn't have that soft white pine. So
blew my mind.
Yeah, I remember I went down there and I was showing my guy, showing David White. I go, we're gonna get this house. We're gonna be able to make all these moldings. Didn't work.
That's so funny. Williams & Husky's are awesome for that up here because we're running everything through it.
And we just don't do that.
Yeah.
And I'm not. I look at it now, and I kind of like it's kind of a little toy. It is a toy.
Oh, you have a giant one now.
Yeah, exactly. and so when I think about that little thing, I'm like, why would I use that? I would rather take a shaper out to a job site than I would take that little Williams & Husky.
That's so funny. Well, it's so funny. We just got told the other day by our instructor Tom. He was like, "You buy a Williams & Husky, you can start making money." That's like because you can go out, you can make any mill. Anything you want to make, you go out there and you're self-sufficient on, you know, all your stuff. You're able to work.
That concept is true.
Yeah, but it's just so funny.
But I wouldn't do it with the Williams & Husky.
Yeah.
Would you do it with for a small
shaper?
Shop
a
like
shaper.
That? Just a shaper?
Yeah. Or probably a shaper just because you can get customized.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. What's your favorite type of wood?
I would say for actually working with Spanish cedar.
Spanish cedar.
Really? You like the smell and all that stuff?
I'm allergic to it, I think.
It gets on my tongue. It tastes funny on my tongue.
I love really that taste. No, I really love the smell of it. Like,
yeah.
It smells so good. And it's like so workable. You can just run it across bits and it's not hard on your blades at all. But for actually like, I think white oak though. Like for actually like the way stuff looks like stain grade because Spanish cedar is just going to be painted.
Yeah.
White oak, I think.
I like white oak too. What about you?
I have to think about it. It depends on what we are building.
Like you built that Corinthian thing in walnut. Is that your favorite?
Well, we chose walnut because we wanted a premium hardwood and we needed something that'd be easy to carve. And walnut is in the basswood family, and so it's an even grain, and it carves really well. So we chose it because of that. But you bring up the point where, like, if I'm building a sash, I like using like a vertical grain Doug fir or like a longleaf pine, or like an old growth tidewater red cypress. But if I'm building a door, I want white oak. And if I'm building, you know, running moldings, I want, you know, something even grained and stuff. But probably my favorite wood if I was building furniture would be cherry. So it's like changes.
Yeah, for the task.
Cherry might be up there for me because I'm doing a table out of cherry right now and I have just those stacks of cherry outside my house right now. I really like
them.
There's a
furniture maker, pretty. Thomas Mosier. I think he just died, but he had this modern shaker furniture line, and he would build things in ash and cherry, and they were really pretty. And he would mix the woods, and you'd have this variation. And he's probably one reason why I like cherry because I think it's just such a pretty color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it purples, gets that nice purplish to it.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Get it into the sunlight.
What I'm surprised I didn't hear you say sapele for the doors and windows.
Well, it's really I love how it turns out because it's a heavy wood and it's been very stable for us to use it. But I'm not necessarily attracted to its grain structure, right?
My complaint on the Spanish cedar that I love so much is I built that back door to my garage out of it and it's so light. I don't like how like weak it feels.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we at the job site we used Spanish cedar and mahogany interchangeably just because they look very similar to each other in their grain structure and their coloring and everything. And so for whatever reason, mahogany was like whenever we needed something harder. So like all the parting beads in the windows was all mahogany. And then everything else, like the sash, well actually one of the sash I actually just repaired with Spanish cedar, but we did like moldings in Spanish cedar. Or I repaired it with pine because it was originally pine, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it changes per task, like what you're doing.
Yeah. I'm excited that over the next 5 years, you'll keep traveling and I think we'll see even better work from you guys. Mm-hmm. Like I believe that. I think you'll, what I think it also does is you'll have things in your head and you're not going to be relying on someone else to design something for you. You're going to be able to go, you know what I saw? I saw something be really cool. And if we did that, and then either you show a picture, or you'll sketch it out or whatever you do, but that's kind of be going to be a next level for you when you have enough of that information that you're sharing, and all of a sudden you're the expert coming into the design meeting going, well, I was inspired by this and I think we should try that. That's what I'm excited for you.
You know, cool story. Went to the Build Show Live, the VIP on Thursday, like a month ago when that was going on. And I met this guy. He said, are you finished Carpentry TV? I was like, yeah, yeah. So he was a builder in the Dallas area. Yeah. Yeah, you can call me Finnish. but I met up with him, and he has a $5.5 million build on the PGA, the new Frisco area. Yeah. And he's like, there's not that much drywall in this thing. Like, it's a ton of millwork. He's like, I'm like, that's cool. And I was like, well, I'll take a look at it if you want. I kind of invited myself, and he's like, yeah, come on, you know? So we went, and it's in framing right now, and I think he wants us to do it.
Oh, nice.
And, so and cool. It's you walk in, it's like a Doric entry. It's got triglyphs and everything.
Wow.
And he said, like, we trust you with this because of what we've seen you doing. Like, he saw That's my so mantle. Cool. He saw the stuff I'm doing for you.
That's great. And
it was really awesome.
That's so exciting, dude.
Dude, I love that.
Yeah, it was really cool. So that's kind of already happening. Like,
yeah.
What you're saying, like, people coming and like kind of relying on me to have that authority in the job, it feels good because I feel comfortable. Like, I joke around a lot. You know, I try to like be lighthearted at the podcast and make it funny. But like, a lot of the stuff I take very seriously when we're actually working, you know.
Do you know how big a deal this is? Like, that is huge.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for you. I think that's like, you have like stepped up a tier.
Yeah.
To
the
be
master.
Well, let's not go that far, Justin.
No, I'm not a master, but I don't know. I feel like he like trusted me, you know, like I walked through, I was talking to him about the triglyphs. I was talking and he's the PM. He doesn't know, like, the architects are drawing this stuff.
That's like the next level that I want our listeners. I want everybody to kind of, yes, we should be leading that design, that we should be doing that. And you now have the opportunity to go in and say, well, you know, the proportions on that are kind of, do I have the opportunity to do? And, you, and all of a sudden you become the expert because, you know, the fact that you knew what a triglyph was, that guy didn't know what a triglyph was.
That probably sold the job. How do you want your triglyphs? This guy's got it.
Do you like the way Chambers did it or Palladio? Yeah.
We could even go to Serlio's model if you want to get crazy.
So, anyway, I'm so excited for you. That is awesome.
Yeah, that was cool. But like,
that's
I told
makes my day.
I told your PMs about it too because I was like, you guys are still my priority. Like,
you need to go do that, and you know, if you need to hire more guys or whatever to do that.
Well,
I mean, my only concern is just that. You got to make sure the money's right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you know, I remember my first big millwork job was $600,000 at the Hill County Courthouse. And I had totally missed on how long it was actually going to take to do that. And I had bid the wood at, that included the wood. And so it's probably a little bit comparable to yours, at $12 a board foot. And I ended up getting the wood for $2 a board foot. And if I hadn't had that spread change, I would be out. I'd been out of business. And so,
wow. Why do you have so many stories about almost going out of business?
yeah, I do. Anyway, just I wanted you to just be careful about that money.
Yeah,
yeah. Just make sure you're making money.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's well, thankfully they're letting me run it like how your jobs run. So. I talked to him about
that. That's
really
cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
What does that mean, though? Run it like how your job's
going? Cost plus.
Cool.
So I'm not giving him a hard bid. Like, it's going to be this amount. And I told him, like, I still want to be in that first number I told you. Like, just because you showed me your cards at, you know, what you have, I don't want to be like, oh, well, that's what I have to work with.
Yeah.
I still want to try to hit what I've you know.
Okay,
you know,
well, and that's a smart lesson, you guys listening out there. If you're good, right, and you're not, you know, remember Gary Katz? They said, "Yeah, let's go bid it." He goes, "No, there's no bidding it. This is what I'll give you to do this job." Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
If you refresh us, what is that? What did he say?
That the clamshell stories?
I don't fully remember that.
Gary Katz was saying that he and his brother went to that apartment builder, and the apartment builder was like, they looked at the bid because they were going to bid all the trim.
Yeah.
And the guy said, and they said to the guy, the developer, they said, "Well, let's go look at the numbers. We'll give you a bid." And he goes, "There's no bidding this." He goes, "I've got $2 a foot to put the trim in, and either you take that or you don't do it." Right? That's a hard bid. Right. You've got to do it for that number.
Got it.
This is... I think you're allowed to have that flexibility to go in and say, "Look, it's cost plus. You know, this is what I think it's going to cost. This is where, but I've got to get into this and got to figure it out," because you have developed clout to be able to walk into a job and say it's cost plus. Whereas if it's someone they didn't trust, it'd be like, "I better hold this guy to this because, you know, who knows what this thing's going to cost." And, you know, you have that clout. Mm-hmm. And to be able to do that. So now you're covered financially, what I was just concerned about. You've got yourself a cover. And so that's smart. That's great.
Yes, I love working that way because you're exactly right. You can get into, like, how do you know how long something's really going to take? You have an idea, but right. You don't know. So if you're off on your numbers, you're going to eat it.
And when you go in, like you built that bunk room for us at the thing, you probably got into that and said, "Well, actually, you know, while I'm here, we could actually do this, and that's a better idea, and it's going to be better for the client, and it costs more." But you don't, if you were in a fixed bid, you'd be like, "Well, I don't have money to do that," and so you would never try to do something better.
I didn't even think of that part. That's so true. Yeah, you're just trying to get it done, right? Which is the problem of most building, just trying to get it done.
So
there's also kind of this, like,
dude, I'm so excited for you. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that
thank
is
you.
Awesome.
There's also kind of this layer of all this stuff that's really cool too, like where, you know, you're starting to build trust. What is
it? It was so late.
Yeah. You're trying to build trust with the client, where you're like, "Hey, I know more and I understand more." It really is taking us back to how building was done originally, right?
100%.
Even just be able to take over that role from, like, I'm not saying take over for the architect. I'm just saying, like, to be able to go back in and just say,
"You're contributing,
I've seen,
right?"
Yeah, exactly. I've seen historic precedent done this way. And the one thing I've noticed just after being in North Bennett and all the stuff that I'm hearing and understanding and all this stuff, code is like the biggest thing that comes into play. And that's like the biggest contributor to outside forces and more people needing to be involved and more people putting their input on a building. Like, if that didn't exist, you know, it would be a lot easier to have an architect, like a master builder, like back in the day. But because there's all these hoops that are needed to be jumped through in code, that really fractures the whole thing up. But to be able to own the design side of things and, like, own that millwork is really cool and brings us back to where traditionally it would have been, you know?
Yeah, I'd love it. When does that job start?
It's going to be right after the ranch.
Great.
So pretty soon, actually.
That's awesome. Yeah. Good for you.
It's
really exciting.
Well, they want to do content there too.
That's
so
awesome.
The guy you actually did, I think I know he talked to you, the project manager.
Yeah, I talked to a guy from, I can't remember who I talked to.
It probably was him, because he recorded, he asked someone an answer. He asked one of the architects a question and said, "Hey, I'm here with Brent Hull. Can you answer this? Do you remember something like that?" And he recorded your answer.
Really?
Maybe it was audio.
Yeah, maybe I kind of remember that. Yeah.
But I was like, "I'd love to, you know, do content here." And he was like, "Oh yeah, the owners would love that too. Like, they, and we would love that."
Cool.
I was like, "I'd bring Brent up here if he's interested." And they were like, "That'd be awesome." So
cool. Yeah.
It looks pretty cool.
Awesome.
And you can bring your golf clubs,
I guess. Yeah, right, I haven't played up there yet. Yeah, that's a good point.
All right. Well, that wraps up our time in Boston. Thank you guys for watching this episode of the Passion for Craft podcast, and we'll see you guys next time.